Gary sits there, was traveling down a country road with his wife, mother, and three children. They had a wonderful life together, full of laughter, learning, and blessings. Gary and his wife had a great marriage. On this particular day, Gary was leaving a home school field trip that they all thoroughly enjoyed. And what was about to happen next would change his life forever. Instantly, a drunk driver killed Gary's wife, mother, and his daughter. In a moment, life as he knew it was gone forever. It'd be a pretty rough day, wouldn't it? Some years later, Gary wrote in his book, A Grace Disguised, which is a good book to read. Gary chronicles his journey. And as he worked through all the emotions and trauma of losing his wife, his mother, and his daughter in one day, he stated one of the hardest realities to come to grips with was the reality of his own mortality. And it was not only his own mortality that he had to wrestle with, but the transient nature of everyone and of everything that is done under the sun. As I prayed about which book to preach through next, it was after several conversations with you, members in this church, as you spoke to me about the challenges that you face as you were facing difficulties in this life. I know we needed to take a journey through a book that is a little different than most of the other books in the Bible. And this is the book of Ecclesiastes. Welcome to the introduction of vanity. Will you take this journey with me into considering the nature of your own mortality? Do you have the courage to ask yourself, why are you chasing the wind? And will you accept the conclusion of the matter? This is what the book of Ecclesiastes challenges us with. Now let's enter into this most interesting book. Turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 1, as we have an introduction into vanity. Three words. Three words. If you understand these three words, you'll understand much of this book. As you open the scriptures and see chapter 1, verse 1, the Bible reads, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem." The words of the preacher. The word for preacher here is the Hebrew word Kohelet. Kohelet is the title of this book in Hebrew. So in Hebrew, it's not called Ecclesiastes, it's called Kohelet. Well, what is the meaning of Kohelet? Kohelet simply means the speaker to the group. You could call Kohelet the MC. He's the master of ceremonies. But he's an interesting speaker because he's the speaker that calls together a group of people. Interestingly enough, a group of people is also called by the same root in Hebrew, Kohelet. Deuteronomy 33, verse 4, Moses commanded a law for us, a heritage of the congregation of Jacob. That is the meeting, the congregation of the people. So the speaker is one who calls forth a group to instruct him. In Hebrew, the name for Ecclesiastes is Kohelet. The English name is based upon the Greek. When the scriptures, the Hebrew scriptures were translated into Greek in the Greek Septuagint, the Kohelet was translated into Ecclesiastes. This is the one who calls forth an assembly. We know the word the ekklesia. Ekklesia is the Greek name for the church. The ekklesia is the church. Ecclesiasticus is one who calls forth the meeting of the church. So now you see here why, when we think about who is the one who calls for the meeting of the church, well, it would be the preacher. So we have an understanding why the Kohelet here is translated in our English Bibles as the preacher. The preacher is a fine translation, but it's not exactly the same as a pastor. Okay? This Kohelet is giving a philosophical treatise upon the nature and the meaning of life. It is important to note that this Kohelet has a very specific function within the book. Duane Garrett, in his commentary, states, "This verse indicates that although the author of the work is Solomon, he writes under the role name as the Kohelet, or the teacher. He is not speaking in the capacity of a king, but as an instructor. The book contains advice and reflections rather than decrees." Interesting perspective on the word Kohelet and the usage of the word Kohelet. This is also important to consider because the way that this verse is written has caused many to question the Solomonic authorship of the book. Most evangelical scholars, I don't know, they may be divided. I don't know how many, but definitely a majority of evangelical scholars would not believe that Ecclesiastes was written by Solomon. It's a very popular view out there that this was written by Kohelet, and the Kohelet was a different author, a later, obviously God is the author, but a later human author who came and was writing in the fashion of this philosopher. I do not take that view. I think that Solomon was identifying himself as the author, as in the first verse, and he is writing as this Kohelet who is declaring this wisdom, philosophical, skeptical narrative. The historical understanding of the authorship of this book is that Solomon wrote it. I take that view. I believe it's clear. It's clearly indicated that Solomon was the intended author of this book. It starts out in verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. You have another verse that follows this, and that's Ecclesiastes 1:11, when it says the preacher or the Kohelet, the preacher was king over Israel in Jerusalem. So here he's identifying himself, I would see, as Solomon. Again, some have understood this what in English comes to be the past tense, if you notice there. And I'm just saying this because as you look at videos and as you immerse yourself, as I trust you will, in the study of Ecclesiastes, you may run into many of these different understandings. When it says the preacher was king over Israel and Jerusalem, the thought would be, wait a minute, Solomon is the king, and then he was not the king. Why would it put it in the past tense? Why would it say, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem? That's not what Solomon did. He was the king, and then he was not the king. And they would say it's someone who's removed from Solomon, thinking later about addressing this personification in this way. And that is done in different literature, in different traditions and literature traditions and things of that nature, which of course you can quote. My understanding, was king, it's a verb. It's in the Cal Perfect. See, al-sal in his Hebrew grammar states concerning the Hebrew perfect that its primary function is in dealing with the kind of action rather than the timing of the action. The perfect deals with completed action in contrast to incomplete action. So, time tense is not the main emphasis of the Hebrew verbal system, number one. Number two, he says, in the perfect, the speaker is an outsider considering the situation as a whole, with the beginning and the end both in view. That's what's happening here. That's why it's in the cal perfect. Cal stem, perfect verb, because Solomon is reflecting over his life. I was the king over Israel. And he's at the end of his life or somewhere in there, and he's reflecting upon the totality of his life, of which the perfect makes perfect sense. That's why I believe that this is written by God, who used Solomon to be the human authorship of the book of Ecclesiastes. And of course, this king, as he was king, existed as king, reflecting upon the meaning of Ecclesiastes, reflecting upon the meaning of his life. He was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And there's only two people that did that, and that would be David and Solomon, who were king over Israel in Jerusalem. So that pretty much narrows it down. The first verse and this verse make it very clear. I believe that this is dealing with Solomon as the author. If you take a different view, that's fine. But just remember that this is the Kohelet who's speaking, and we need to deal with what he says. I believe that Solomon is uniquely qualified to explore the question of life and its meaning under the sun, because if anyone would have been able to find meaning and make sense of life as it existed in this world, it would have been Solomon. Two reasons why I believe that. Number one, Solomon had the wisdom. He had the wisdom. Remember, Yahweh appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask, what shall I give you?" And Solomon said, "You have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" And this speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked for. Then the Lord said to him, "Because you have asked this thing and have not asked long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any be like you after you. And I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days." That's found in 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 5. To 13. Solomon had the wisdom to seek this out. And number two, Solomon also had the means. He had the wealth and the power to do and explore what simply most could not. Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 2:10, "Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labors. Then I looked on all the works of my hands that they had done, and all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed, all was vanity, a grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. So we see this Kohelet is one who whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. King Solomon lived a full life. For starters, he built the temple. He followed through what his father had told him to do. He followed his father's vision. 1 Kings 10:23, in concluding Solomon's reign, says, "So King Solomon surpassed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. Now all the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, what God had put in his heart. So he had fame, he had fortunes, he had greatness. He had everything, everything that men under the sun desire. He had it all. Each man brought his present, articles of silver and gold, garments, armor, spices, horses, and mules at a set rate year by year. So Solomon gathered chariots and horsemen. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen whom he stationed in his chariot cities and with the king in Jerusalem. The king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stones. He made cedar trees as abundant as sycamores, which are in the lowlands." 1 Kings 11:1. "But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Amorites, Edomites, Sidonians, Hittites, from the nations whom the Lord said to the children of Israel, 'You shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your heart after their gods.' Solomon clung to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away." Solomon had it all. Anything that would be desirable for men to acquire, Solomon had it all. Wouldn't you like to learn from him what he thinks about the issues of life? Now, you know, many covet those things, but they never get them. Many would say, "If I only had this, if I only had this, if I only had this, then I would be happy." It was interesting when I was in the Ukraine. I was sitting with the brothers and sisters there, and they were commenting on how wonderful it must be to live in America. And they would say, "If only I had a car, wow, I would be happy." And they were commenting on how wonderful life would be in America. And it was interesting for us, college students, who are hearing them, and we're thinking, wow, we have a unique perspective here that they don't have. We know, because we have electricity that works all the time. They didn't. We have hot water that works all the time. They didn't. We have pretty easy access to automobiles. They didn't. Okay? And we know something that they didn't know. We know that even if you have all those things, it still doesn't bring ultimate meaning and satisfaction in life, does it? Well, Solomon had all those things. So we are learning from someone who had the wisdom and the means to seek this out and draw his conclusions. If anyone could have been satisfied with this life, it would have been Solomon. Therefore, Solomon is uniquely qualified to teach us in this book as the Kohelet. Two words. Kohelet, the wisdom speaker. Second word, Solomon, the human author. Third word, Hevel. Hevel. And if you look on the English spelling, the B, in Hebrew, the bait can go for a B or a V. That's why it's Hevel and not Hebel. Hevel is the word vanities. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2 introduces the primary word, the primary term in the book of Ecclesiastes. Hevel is used 36 times in this short 12-chapter book. 36 times, it's in every chapter except for chapter 10. 36 times the word hevel is used, and it's heavily used in verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So you see in that one verse, it's used how many times? Vanity of vanities, says Kohelet. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. 5 times! So this is how he introduces it. Solomon the Kohelet, vanity. Vanity of vanities, it's all hevel. Hevel. What does hevel mean? Much of Ecclesiastes is an exploration of the semantic range, the full range of meaning of the word hevel. There's many different nuances to hevel. And Solomon picks them up. I believe the best English translation for hevel is vanity. But vanity, there's not one English word that covers all the range of meanings. So we're going to camp out on this word hevel for a little bit. What is the core meaning of hevel? The core meaning of hevel is vapor. It's vapor. It's what happened when it was a little cool last night. And you would go outside and you go, do it right now. Put your hand over your mouth. You feel that? That's hevel. What is that? That's hevel. What is that? It's vapor. What is significant about vapor? It dissipates quickly. That's hevel. It's transient. It dissipates quickly. It is vapor. Proverbs 21:6 uses it this way. The getting of treasure by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a snare of death. Hevel. That's ESV. New King James translates that same verse, Proverbs 21:6. Getting treasure by a lying tongue is a fleeting fantasy of those who seek death. So there, hevel is translated by the New King James as a fleeting fantasy. Literally. A breath. A vapor. Vanity in the biblical usage means nothingness, emptiness, or chaos. Or disorder. So disorder and chaos are a little different than vapor, aren't they? They're similar, but they're different. This term hevel is also used in connection with idolatry or with idols. Idols and idolatry are always said to be hevel. They're nothing. They're disorderly. They're chaotic. They're passing away. The biblical sense is apparent in the most frequent Hebrew word for vanity, hevel, vapor, breath, Isaiah 57:13. This term connotes the transitory nature of life. And it has a parallel to it, doesn't it? Ecclesiastes, if you know, it's exegetical, meaning it's defined in the text itself, isn't it? And when you think of vanity, vanity, what is the definition? What is a phrase that's given to define vanity? It's right there in the text. A chasing after the wind. What is hevel? But a chasing after the wind. How many of you have tried to chase after the wind? Good. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting to do. Especially when those twisters come. Right? When the twisters come, whoosh, my kids, they want to run out after them. They want to be right in the middle of them. It's an interesting place to be in the middle of a dirt twister. That's hevel right there. You want to speak about a heavy concentration of hevel, that's it. Whoosh, those things come together. They make an interesting sound. Have you ever heard that little crack sound? Pow. When I first came here, I was sitting out praying one time, and I heard that. I never heard anything like that. And I looked over, and there was a hevel, a twister right there. Whoosh, right? And I ran to it and I was in it for a moment. And then it's gone. hevel, a chasing after the wind. Do you ever catch the wind? You can never catch the wind. Never catch the wind. It's here today, gone tomorrow, as quick as a wing. It's everywhere, everybody experiences. In that sense, it's ubiquitous. It's all over. It's everywhere. It happens to everybody. The wind is everywhere and everybody's chasing the wind. The question Ecclesiastes causes us to ask is this: why do you chase the wind? Why? Why do we chase the wind? It's vanity. You don't catch it, but we all do it. Hevel. Hevel. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Ecclesiastes 1:14. Vanity is placing one's own self or pursuits above those of God or others. This results in ultimately worthless and fleeting vapors. For if one's purposes are not consistent with the eternal purposes of God, then one's efforts are for naught. Vanity thus encompasses the delusion of the person who lives without regard for divine law or God's guidance and sustaining power. That is hevel. But Kohelet pushes us to consider this even more. We all know that life is vain without God. Kohelet is writing to us. He's writing to the assembly. He's writing to the ecclesia. He's writing to the people of God. And Kohelet knows that we know that life is in vain without God. So the Kohelet here is pushing us to consider another aspect of hevel that is specific to those who follow after God's law, who know the difference between good and evil. And that is this: that they themselves are not immune from hevel. They themselves are not immune to the vanity of this world. Ecclesiastes calls us to account. Listen, before you rush to your answer of how to make life fit in a perfect package, until you rush to your answer to say, well, of course, bad things happen to bad people. And of course, good things happen to good people. Consider this, because Kohelet is after you. He says this: have you stopped and considered that both the wise and the fool die alike? Have you thought about that? This is hevel. Have you considered that your wisdom one day will be completely forgotten? This is hevel. Have you considered that all that you have worked for will go to someone else? This is hevel. Have you sought after wisdom so that you would have a better life? You know, this too is hevel. Have you worked hard to build things, people, and wealth? Hevel. Have you stopped and consider what you don't know? This is hevel. Ecclesiastes 11:5. As you do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, except this: you're going to die. in this sense. Ecclesiastes is pessimistic. Ecclesiastes teaches us this about God. He's the Creator. He is sovereign, and you're not going to know what He's doing in this world on a day-to-day basis as it relates to these issues that Solomon's going to lay out for us. You're not going to know. In this sense, this book of Ecclesiastes is the counterbalance to much of Scripture. See it as a canonical correction, much like Job. It's a canonical correction to the Proverbs. It completes the revelation of God for people that live, for people of faith that live in a fallen world full of hevel, vanities all around them. Solomon grew up hearing his father speak about the goodness of God. He heard and knew Psalm 23 from his father. He knew, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Kohelet simply raises everyday life examples that don't fit so nicely into our religious narrative, that don't fit so nicely into our religious experience. Ecclesiastes 7:15. "I have seen everything in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness." How does that fit? Hevel. It's heavily hevel. Things that shouldn't be are. Goodness and mercy does not always follow me all the days of my life. Sometimes hevel, chaos, confusion, difficulties, pain, and things that should not be, evil, oppression, are full of this experience that I have in this life. I know this is how life is supposed to be, according to God's law word, but it is not. Now you're starting to understand the hevel that the Kohelet is teaching. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is hevel. The Hebrew text says hevel. Havilim, Hamar, Kohelet, Hevel, Havilim, Hakol, Hevel. It's all Hevel. It's the emphasis of this book. Used 36 times in 12 chapters. Core meaning, vapor. Three nuanced meanings. I'm going to organize this. Three nuanced meanings. Number one, Hevel is vanity. That is this. There are passages in which the author states his inability to find fulfillment in life's work due to his lack of control over his possessions. This is vanity. This is throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. An example of this is 2:11. "Then I looked on the works that my hands had done and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity, a grasping for the wind. There is no profit under the sun." You are not in control. Control is an illusion. God is sovereign, not man. Most people work so hard for this life, but it's all vanity. So why do we spend so much time and effort chasing after the wind? Think about this. That's the first usage. The second usage of Hevel are those verses in which the author struggles. There are those verses in which the author struggles with the idea that the connection between sin and judgment, righteousness and final deliverance is not always direct or obvious. In this term, hevel, it's referring to the fact that life is messed up. So it's not just, it's not here the vapor effect. It's more, it's absurd. So here you could translate Hevel, it's absurd, or it's unfair, or life just is chaotic. Life is messed up. Ecclesiastes 2:15. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. 6:7. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet his mouth is never satisfied. Can someone say Hevel? It is not always true that goodness and mercy follow in the path of the righteous. 7:13. Consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider, surely God has appointed the one as well as the other. Hevel! That's Hevel! God brings prosperity, God brings adversity, so that man cannot find out anything that will come after him. I have seen everything in my days of vanity. There is a just man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in wickedness. Kohelet says, Hevel! 3. Third usage. Thirdly, there are those verses in which the author laments the shortness of life, and that would be the breath. Vanity. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to animals. One thing befalls them, as one dies, so dies the other. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over the animal, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and all return to the dust. Hevel. Everything dies. And here you have an allusion to the fall in Ecclesiastes 3, 19 to 20. You have an allusion to the fall, which I believe the creation, God is creator, and the fall lies as a theological backdrop to all of Ecclesiastes. Creation, fall. Creation, fall. Creation, fall. God is sovereign. What do we do? How do we live life in a fallen world? Hevel. Hevel. Kohelet forces us to deal with our own mortality and the transient nature of life. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. James 4:14. This is a message that is consistent throughout all the scriptures. Kohelet just really presses it hard for the religious people in the assembly to think about these issues in life that don't completely fit their experiences, even though it should. Kohelet knows the answer. He knows the answer. But he has designed his speech to draw you into thinking about subjects that you are not comfortable with thinking about. Yeah, I learned more going to a funeral. Counterintuitive. People throughout time have not thought that way. We don't. I want to learn something today. Let's have someone die so I can go to a funeral and learn something. That's Kohelet. He's taking us on a journey, and it's a journey we need to take, because it's a journey of life that we all go on. The journey, part number two. The journey. The question, what is the profit? What is the use? Why? I want you to ask this question honestly of yourself. The context under the sun, and this is important. The phrase under the sun is used in this book 27 times. Okay, so it's highly repeated. 27 times. So Kohelet's main concern is what? Life under the sun. Life in this world. What is the profit of life in this world? We use the word secular. Secular has the meaning of life in this world. That's what secular means. Okay? Under the sun, used 27 times. So the context of Ecclesiastes is under the sun. The content of this book is, it's unique wisdom literature. It's in the category, it's in the genre of unique wisdom literature. It is skeptical wisdom. And for those who think that Ecclesiastes was written much later, there are many parallels in the ancient Near Eastern literature, in Egyptian literature, parallels that would be around Solomon's time that would reflect this kind of wisdom literature, this kind of skeptical wisdom. There are some loan words that people say are much later. Some Persian loan words found in Ecclesiastes. There's a couple of them. I think a few Persian loan words found in the text of Ecclesiastes do not justify a later date. Who knows why those couple of loan words are there, but certainly Solomon could have access to a couple of loan words from other languages. Don't we do that all the time? Now, if they were like 50% or a high percentage, then that would be significant, but it's not. So the content is this skeptical wisdom with the goal to undermine false hopes regarding life in this world. Dr. Provan says, Kohelet's discourse is best understood by the hope of leading his hearers to think a certain way. They are designed to gain a hearing by dispelling false conclusions about the world by undermining false dreams and hopes. That's what Kohelet hopes to do. Undermine your false dreams and hopes about living life in this world. That is why the book is mostly negative in tone. It's mostly pessimistic in tone. The main obstacle to living well in this world is that moral beings constantly refuse to accept their own mortality. Kohelet sets out to convince them of these. Kohelet challenges us to make a choice. Accept the reality of your own mortality and stop living for a lie. Stop chasing the wind. And accept the grim reality that much of what you live for is hevel. Kohelet does not use theological reasoning to make his point. Rather, he points to the realities of life. He honors the life lessons that he has learned. As such, Kohelet is a true wisdom teacher. For wisdom, chokmah, is fundamentally skilled living in this life. Here is an outline of his speech. Introduction. Ecclesiastes chapters 1 and 2. Wisdom, pleasure, joy. Chapter 3, a time for everything. Chapter 4, achievement and oppression. Chapter 5, worship, wealth. Chapter 7, the help of wisdom. Life out of control. Dealing with an unjust world. Chapter 8, living in the face of death. Chapter 9, the way of wisdom. Chapter 9 to 10, God's mystery, chapter 11, 1 to 8, the days of youth and old age, chapter 11 through 12, 8. Kohelet's conclusion of life under the sun, as he draws to the conclusion of old age, when the grinders cease, because you have no teeth, and he poetically expresses this dying old process. Here is his conclusion at the end of this book, chapter 12, verse 7. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, a reference to the fall. And the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. This is life in a fallen world. It is full of hevel everywhere. However, now, Kohelet has not just argued in vain. He may engage in some pessimism. He may engage in some deconstructionism. But he is not a postmodern deconstructionalist. He is seeking to move us to a positive conclusion, to an affirmation. And he has been pointing to this even through the body of his work. However small these little markers have been, they are there. And as you read through Ecclesiastes, which I ask you to take this journey and be reading through the whole book of Ecclesiastes as much as you can, you'll notice these little drops of light that are sprinkled throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. They are markers. This is what distinguished Ecclesiastes from falling off the cliff into the absurd philosophies of nihilism. Listen, Kohelet is not Nietzsche. Kohelet does not call for the complete abandonment and meaninglessness of life. And as Nietzsche then came to that conclusion and committed suicide, Kohelet takes us to a very different place. He's not going to that place. Listen to the drops of light, the breadcrumbs of truth that he puts in the body of this writing. I know that nothing is better than to rejoice and to good in their lives. And also that every man should eat, drink, and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is a gift of God, Ecclesiastes 3:12. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage, and rejoice in his labors, it is the gift of God, Ecclesiastes 5:19. Go, eat your bread with joy, and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already accepted your works. Let your garments always be white, and let your head lack no oil. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for this is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. Ecclesiastes 9:7-9. Ecclesiastes is to be read and understood as a whole. And here comes the ray of light that illumines every passage and I trust will shine through all the hevel in your life, all the lies that reside in your heart that cause you to chase after the wind. For this is the whole conclusion of the matter. This is the whole point of the book. And he includes with this ray of light, this light beam that just shines and illumines everything. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. That's where he leads. That's where Hevel leads the Kohelet. That's where he's trying to move us all in the assembly to the conclusion that life in this world is hevel. So what do? Don't follow Nietzsche. Follow the Kohelet and look to God. There's nothing more important than this. Fear God, keep his commandments, and he gives him this purpose. This is the purpose of man. This is man's all. Verse 14, chapter 12. Here's the reason why. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. So fear God and keep his commandments and live life for the glory of God, not for the vain passing hevel of this world. Father, we thank you for your word. We thank you for this introduction to one of the most interesting books in the Scriptures. I pray, O God, that we would take this journey as an assembly and that you would be our teacher, that you would instruct us in these things, that we would draw out the meaning in our lives and ask us and show us where we are chasing the wind, that we may come to the end of ourselves and follow you in all we say and in all we do. In Jesus' name.